And we are in 2 Samuel, mostly in chapter 14 today as we continue the life of David. Sometimes the thing that you want, sometimes the situation that you look at and it's heartbreaking and you want a particular outcome from that situation is really what you don't need or want. You think that, this is where my heart is, and this is what my longing is, and this is what I really want to see. And you look at it, and you say, well, if it happens, then this could happen, and this could happen, and this could happen. It's all the things that we want to have happen. And yet, in the long term, it is a disastrous situation if that were to all pan out. We saw last time that Absalom had murdered his brother, Amnon, and the primary reason stated for that murder was because Amnon had raped his half-sister, Absalom's full sister, Tamar, and he had stewed on that, and after a couple of years was able to take his vengeance out and murder Amnon. Absalom is not only the king, the king's son, but he's the grandson of another king who is in Geshur, Talmai, king of Geshur, which is a little Aramaic kingdom to the east of the Sea of Galilee. That Golan Heights area is a little bit to the north of Geshur, but it was a small autonomous kingdom, but allied with David because of the marriage to Absalom's mother. He's outside of Israelite jurisdiction. Come on in. He's outside of Israelite jurisdiction, and he is in a place where. He's in a place where he is going to be well taken care of. He's in a place where he's comfortable. He's in a place where he will be honored. He is in the court of a king. Now, granted, it's not as big. It's not anywhere near as magnificent as the Israelite kingdom is concerned, although it may be older as far as the capital is concerned. Remember that David had made Jerusalem his capital, and he had a palace built there, but what was later built by Solomon was far, far grander. But there he is, he's in Geshur, he's comfortable. But we know that Absalom's scheming, that very likely, reading between the lines, and of course what will follow, that Absalom's murder of Amnon had a couple of purposes. That it wasn't just to take vengeance out on what he had done regarding his sister, but also Amnon was what was between Absalom and the throne. If we go through the genealogies and so on, and remember that back then, without modern medicine and stuff like that, it was not uncommon for people not to make it out of their out of childhood, or even make it into adulthood. They would die as children, teenagers, whatever. We know that Absalom was the number three son of David. The second one is not mentioned other than any lists, so he's probably off the scene, out of the scene here. Amnon was the oldest. Under normal circumstances, and of course Solomon was way down the list. Solomon was way down the list, but he was the Lord's choosing. But under normal circumstances, the eldest son, as it is with the British monarchy and most monarchies around the world, the eldest son took over the kingdom. Amnon was that person. Amnon's out of the way. Crown prince is now Absalom. And this creates a bit of a dilemma, because if Absalom is the legal heir to the throne, and here he is living up in Geshur because he'd murdered his brother, and he's up there to escape justice, and yet he's the heir to the throne, this creates a bit of a quandary. This creates a problem. And although Absalom is staying up there, I don't think that he is in the back of his mind thinking, well, this is my lot, this is where I'm going to be. I think that he has goals and plans that we will be seeing later on. But he's up there. And it said there in verse 38 of chapter 13, so Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And verse 39 says, and the soul of David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. Time had passed. He was comforted. Can't bring Amnon back. But Absalom's still alive, and he hasn't seen his eldest surviving boy in 3 years. And he wants to see him. Now, he's not going to say this necessarily, but he misses his eldest son. In spite of the circumstances, in spite of the situation there, he misses that oldest son. And it says there in verse 1 of chapter 14, now Joab is one of these days, I say this every time Joab comes up, one of these days I got to do a series on Joab. Joab is one of the most perplexing characters you got in the scripture. And Joab, who is the commander of the army, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. Now remember, Joab is David's nephew. They're about the same age, but Joab is David's nephew. And Joab, for whatever reasons, it may be personal reasons, maybe he was, maybe he had a foot in the door with Absalom. Maybe, you know, he's wanting to make sure that if something were to happen to David, that I've got a successor in there that's going to allow me to keep my job. Perhaps it is just that he's looking out for David's well-being. We don't know. And with Joab, you don't know. He's a very scheming individual. But it says, Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. So here's what he does. He's got a plan. He's got a, I think we got all these scheming people. And by the way, the Lord has never mentioned in any of these passages dealing with all this. Joab sent to Tekoa. Now, Tekoa was a small town north of Jerusalem a little ways. And he sent to Tekoa, and he fetched thence a wise woman. The idea of a wise woman here is not necessarily that she was a brilliant scholar and knew how to do what and thus and such. It's that she was a good con artist, just like Joab. And she knew how to pull the strings, and she knew how to bring on the tears, and could turn them off and turn them on at will. And so he gets this woman. He says, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel, and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead. I'm going to admit something. Yesterday was a pajama day. Yesterday was the day that I got up and I spent the day in my slippers and a flannel shirt and my pajamas. And I didn't get showered yesterday. And if I had answered the door yesterday, I would have terrified you. My hair just everywhere. A day's beard and so forth. And can you imagine in this situation, in this time, you went without doing your normal getting yourself ready for the day kind of thing. You did that during mourning. So you didn't anoint yourself, you didn't wash, you didn't do what you normally do because you're mourning. That was a sign of grief. And so this part's easy. I just don't get ready in the morning for a couple of weeks. And he put words into her mouth, it says there in verse 3. So in verses 4 through 11, you've got a story that she's coming to the king with. Now remember, a king is not just the leader of the country, but he's also the judge of the land. If local authorities do not cannot solve a problem or do not solve a problem to the satisfaction of somebody, they always had the recourse of being able to come to the king. The king was the final authority. And so this woman comes to the king with a story, her situation, which is a perplexing situation. She has two boys. She's a widow. She's got two boys, and the boys were out in the field, and no one else was around, and they got into a fight, and one of them killed the other. Now, under Mosaic law, if somebody murdered somebody, And there are always extenuating circumstances. There was different laws for manslaughter, and there were no witnesses in this situation, but one of the boys killed the other, and the family is wanting to execute the survivor for murder. All right, following through on Mosaic law. And the woman is saying, I've only got the two boys. I'm a widow. I'm not going to have any more sons. And I've only got one left. Now, granted, it's due to murder, one killing the other, but I've got one son left. And if they execute him, the line is gone. There is no heir to the estate. And my son, my father, my husband's name is gone as far as his lineage in Israel is concerned. And so David hears the story and tells her that, you know, it'll be taken care of, not to worry about it. And the woman uses that story to boldly come at the king and tell him his own inconsistency. If he's going to respond this way to her story, then it says in verse 12, then the woman said, let thine handmaid, I pray, speak one word unto my lord the king. And he said, say on. And the woman said, wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one that is faulty, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. For we must all needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet he doth devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. There is mercy with God, is what she's saying. And so she throws this in there, and then she has a couple more verses of flattery to the king. Just throwing that little thing out there that, you know, hey, if you're willing to forget, if you're willing to let my surviving son off, how come you're not willing to let Absalom come home? And by the way, you're a great king, and I voted for you last time, and and so she goes on with all this. Now, here's the thing that's very interesting. Most of us, probably all of us, may be very astute, very perceptive in this area here, but we're blind as a bat to something that's over here. And very often, we see this in political leadership these days. Somebody may be phenomenal regarding economics, or somebody may be phenomenal regarding foreign affairs, or somebody may be phenomenal regarding this, but they can't see this. Or somebody may be sharp as a tack and super disciplined in one area of life, and they have no discipline in another. And David is a very astute, perceptive man. He can look at a situation, and he knows how to deal with his enemies. He knows how to deal with his friends. He knows how to deal with all these things. David's problem is he doesn't know how to deal with his family. And that's not uncommon. That's not uncommon. And so this whole situation comes down with this woman telling her story and everything. And then look at verse 18. Then the king answered and said unto the woman, hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee. And the woman said, well, let the king speak. He's saying, please be honest with me. The king said, is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? Did Joab put you up to this? And the woman said, as thy soul liveth, my lord, none can turn to the right hand or to the left from aught that my lord the king hath spoken. And then she confesses the whole thing. But the point has been made. The point has been made. Because sometimes you have to come in the back door on something. If you just say, how come you won't do this? Well, they get all defensive. But if you come around a different way, some of you know how to do this. You were all children. You did this with your parents. You wanted something, and so you'd come along this way. If you wanted something really big, you cleaned your room, you were cooperative, you did everything you were supposed to do, you were an angel. And then when you maybe even made dinner. and then when you had it all lined up and the parents are happy and pleased, then you spring your request on them. And you have backed them into a little bit of a corner because it might make it a little more difficult for them to deny you your request. And so Joab has done this this same sort of thing. So the request comes in, and the king said unto Joab, verse 21, behold now, I have done this thing. Go therefore and bring the young man Absalom again. He can come home. Go get him. So Joab himself goes and gets Absalom. Absalom still has to face justice, but under this, what we've seen here before, the indication is that mercy will be extended. That's playing into the story that had been told. And Joab bows before the king and is thankful and all this other stuff. So verse 23, so Joab arose and went to Geshur, and he brought Absalom to Jerusalem. Now, so far, so good. But we have a caveat here, which leaves the circumstances hanging. And the king had said, verse 24, and the king said, let him turn to his own house. He can go back to his own house here in Jerusalem. And let him not see my face. He's not to come back to court. He is not to come back to a place of honor and position. He's to come back home. He's to be at his house, but I don't want to see him. Now, he's been gone 3 years. I don't want to see him. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. Well, we have something up in the air here. Absalom had murdered his brother. There has been no official decision as to the outcome of this. We have an unresolved case here. What's going to happen to Absalom? He's been brought home to Jerusalem. He's probably a stone's throw away from David's palace. David hadn't seen him in 3 years. 2 more years are going to go by. 5 years. David hasn't seen Absalom. He doesn't want to see him. He does, but he doesn't. He doesn't want to have to deal with this. But that doesn't make it go away. And so Absalom is chafing at this. I've got plans. I got things I want to do. Am I the crown prince, or am I not the crown prince? What is going to happen here? What is the outcome of this situation? It's like, am I going to get executed? Can I go ahead and make plans for my life, or am I just waiting? And I've got the unknown ahead of me because no decision has been made because the king won't see me. He's already made a command that he's not to see me. And Joab is the one who went to all the trouble to get me here, so I'm going to have Joab take care of getting me to see the king. And it mentions just in passing a couple of things regarding Absalom that are going to come into play here in the what we're going to look at next time. Absalom was an outstandingly handsome man, strikingly good-looking guy. You know, kind of like me. Imagine Absalom. But it does talk about his hair, so imagine me with a big flowing mane of hair, and then you got the idea. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Strikingly handsome. It says there was no blemish in him. He was flawless. When he pulled his head, for it was at year's end that he pulled it, cut his hair once a year, that he weighed the hair of his head, and it was 200 shekels after the king's shekel. 6 pounds of hair were on this guy's head. Thick, long, flowing, curly hair. And he also had 3 sons and a daughter. By the way, we're going to find out later on that none of his sons survived. None of his sons survived. His daughter did, who will cause problems later on. His daughter will. His daughter was an idolater. And she comes in after Solomon's time. Long time down the road. So it says, so there's a situation. He's got good-looking kids. At the time, he's got 3 sons that could possibly come after him as king. He's a sharp-looking guy. Oh, he's the toast of the town. But he hasn't been before the king in 5 years, and he's been in Jerusalem for 2 years, and the king won't see him. So he's not in the court. He is not in the place of honor. He's there, but he's not in the place of honor. And Absalom sent to Joab to have him sent to the king. But Joab wouldn't come and see him either. He's ignoring the summons. And he sent for him a couple of times, and he wouldn't come. We're going to have to take some evasive action here. And so he said to his servants in verse 30, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he's got barley there. Go set it on fire. This will get his attention. And it did. Because Absalom's servants, we know this from before, will do anything Absalom tells them to do. Probably the same guys who had killed Amnon. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom into his house and said, why have you set my field on fire? And you can see Absalom with his arms crossed, with a grin on his face. He says, you know, I called you twice before and you just didn't want to come. So I had to, I'm glad you're here. It's almost rewarding to see somebody that could get under Joab's skin and motivate him because of the type of character Joab is. That Joab has met his match in Absalom. And so Joab came to the king, verse 33, and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came into the king and he bowed himself with his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. Because it says in verse 33, I skipped this part, Absalom said unto Joab, behold, I send unto thee, saying, come hither, that I may send thee to the king. That was the original idea of him coming home from Geshur. Now it says, why am I home from Geshur? It'd been better for me to have been there. Because I haven't seen the king's face. And if there's iniquity in me, then let him execute me. But this unknown is just intolerable. This needs to be resolved. And we see there at the end of verse 33 that the king, by kissing Absalom, extends mercy to the king. That there has been, at least outwardly, an acceptance of Absalom, and he is restored to his position in court. Now, we started by saying that sometimes the thing you really want is the thing you really don't need. And you've got... one of the things that you have in a position of leadership, if you have people that rise to leadership, as David did, one of the things, and people who are very capable in these kinds of things, you have what I call type AA personalities. They are very aggressive people. They've got plans, they are dynamic, they are also have a tendency to be very self-serving. Unless they know the Lord and are willing to yield that to the Lord, folks with that AA personality have a tendency to be self-serving. David's family is chock full of AA personalities. Absalom is going to have it twofold because his grandfather's a king on the other side. So he got a double dose of this. He is a scheming, manipulative, arrogant fella.
He's triple A.
He's triple A. Makes for a small battery, but lots of power. And before this all started to come down, before this whole thing started to snowball, he was originally number three son, was not crown prince. Through a set of circumstances, part of his own making, he is now the crown prince. He is, under normal circumstances, legally the heir to the throne. He's an impatient guy. Kind of like Prince Charles, waiting for his mother to die so that he can become king. And he's actually voiced, I think, in a couple of interviews that he's a little annoyed that she's managed to live this long. He has had to wait longer to become the monarch of England than anybody in British history. Not a record he relishes. And, I mean, his mother became queen, I think, when she was, what, in her teens? Something like that. She was 19 or something like that when Elizabeth came queen. Anyway, the point is that he is now the crown prince. He is now back in court. He's a sharp looking fella. His father, for the times, is a fairly old guy. He's probably in his late 50s, maybe early 60s. which in the day was old. David lived to be 70. That was the oldest of any of Israel's kings that we know of. Saul possibly was older, but we don't know for sure. And so he's impatient. He's impatient. And he's now the heir to the throne. We wanted Absalom home. I wanted my son home. I wanted the restoration. I want harmony in my family. And so now there is peace. There's been comfort because of the passing of time regarding Amnon, and he was a lousy so-and-so anyway. And now we've got Absalom home, and finally we have peace. But it's not going to be, because the thing that they really wanted, the thing that he thought he may actually have now, is all going to be blown to bits here as we look at this next week, because Absalom is a loose cannon. Absalom is a grenade with the pin pulled and somebody's just holding the thing ready to throw it. And David doesn't know it. And Absalom is going to be using his time there in Jerusalem to promote himself. Using that AAA personality, he's going to be promoting himself, and it is going to be the biggest difficulty that David will face in his whole life. This is going to be worse than Saul for David, in part because it's his own son. So what we want, what we crave, what our heart's longing for is often not what we really need and not what is right and what is best. And we're bound by time and we can't always see that. But what David wanted and what David gets are two different things in this situation. We'll see that next week. Heavenly Father, I pray that you'd give us wisdom and insight. It's like parents of small children who are fighting, that they're not interested in justice. They're interested in peace and quiet. And I think that's what David wanted. He was far more interested in having tranquility in his home and having Absalom home than he was in dealing with big problems that were below the surface. Father, give us wisdom as we deal with one another, as we deal with ourselves. Father, that we evaluate our motives as to why we do what we do. We pray for Christ's sake. Amen.